This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Shaoning and Phil. On Monday, the 9th of May, we are turning our attention to the travel and tourism sector. Now, before the COVID-19 pandemic, Southeast Asia was one of the world's most popular travel destinations. We all know the story. The pandemic changed the industry landscape overnight with devastating repercussions for the region's $380 billion US dollar tourism industry.
While the region lags behind North America and Europe that reopened borders sooner, many are seeing the tide begin to turn here as travel restrictions have eased. Airline capacity is improving with many holiday-starved travellers arranging overseas vacations for the first time in 2 years, evident from my Instagram posts. Ticket bookings are rising as popular destinations like Thailand, Malaysia and Indonesia allow quarantine-free entry for vaccinated travellers again.
However, there are still uncertainties as to how fast the region can return to pre-pandemic levels, given that the economic outlook remains murky on the back of rising fuel prices, inflation, and of course, a war in Ukraine. So the question we ask is the worst truly over for this regional tourism sector?
For more on this, we have with us Hannah Pearson, director at Peer Anderson, a research and tourism consultancy. Hannah, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, let's get a picture in terms of numbers. In terms of recovery of tourism numbers, which country is faring well and why?
That's a great question. And it really kind of depends how you define good. Because if we are talking for international travel, then Thailand in the region in Southeast Asia is ahead of the game. They launched their Phuket sandbox way back 1st of July last year. They had that kind of early mover advantage. They then started to trail back a little bit with this test and go, and they had lots of restrictions before departure, on arrival, day five there even. And only now, you know, March, they had about 210,000 visitors. You compare that versus 2019's March, it was 3.5 million visitors. They're at 6% of 2019 numbers, and we're kind of calling that good. But it is, when you compare it around the region, they are doing well. But it's kind of also important to look back at those 2019 numbers as well and realize we have a long, long way to go.
And consequently, which country isn't doing so well and why?
I would say out of the countries who have opened within Southeast Asia so far, Laos is really trailing. So they launched something they called the Green Travel Zone earlier in the year, but it's incredibly restrictive. And as of the 12th of April, they had had just 505 international tourists, so few. Why hasn't it been successful? There's a lot of factors to that. So one was, there's just a lot of restrictions you have to follow to get into the country itself. They have also limited it to certain countries who can actually use the scheme. Once you're in Laos, you're limited to certain areas. You've got the limitations of flight connectivity as well. And you have to book via a travel agent. So Laos really put on all of these regulations and have found, in reality, hardly anybody wants to jump through those hoops. And, you know, that's what we found. The more restrictions and hoops you have to jump through, the less likely that tourists are going to want to travel to your country. And
now, Hannah, a lot of travellers that come to visit this region prior to the pandemic would visit several countries in a single trip. Do you think this will continue, or will it be, you know, will travellers just be focused on visiting one country at a time in Southeast Asia?
Yeah, so Southeast Asia has always been regarded as a mono destination in a way, like many countries within one trip. And in fact, actually, the Singapore Tourism Board CEO was saying that it is important to try to simplify travel requirements amongst ASEAN nations because travelers often see countries in Southeast Asia as a package. And I think that that perception is going to persist with Western travelers. But what they're going to find in the short term, when they're looking at doing these multi-country trips across Southeast Asia, is that it's very complicated. Each country possibly has its own regulations, has its own testing. If you're wanting to combine two or three countries, you may well end up having to fill in multiple online forms. You're going to have multiple RT-PCR tests or antigen tests. Now, Southeast Asia is, as a whole, starting to simplify things. So nowadays, Cambodia, you don't need any kind of testing. Singapore, you don't need testing. Thailand, from the 1st of May, was removed testing, and Malaysia too, in good news for us. So you can see that's starting to become simpler. And I think that travelers will inevitably want to do multi-country trips within Southeast Asia. But until it's at the point where it's simple to do that again, we may well see them opting for mono countries. And that's actually an advantage for Southeast Asian countries. There's a benefit there for them. So, for example, Cambodia, we were just talking about, Cambodia has always been seen as a multi-country destination. It's always, we'll go to Angkor Wat as a stop off for a couple of days, and then we'll go to Vietnam or we'll go to Thailand. But actually, there's so much to do and see in Cambodia. They have the beaches, they have mountains, they have the forests there other than Angkor Wat. And so there is also an opportunity for Southeast Asian countries, if they want to take it, to be able to start to appeal to the longer haul market and present themselves as mono country destinations in their own right as well.
Hannah, if we look at costs, can we expect increases in airfares and accommodations as companies might be looking to offset the losses they've been experiencing in the past 2 years?
I think for airfares, we are going to see this increase, and we have already. The strain on oil prices has meant that airlines across the region are starting to reimpose these jet fuel surcharges. For example, AirAsia brought them back in, and they hadn't had them since 2015. And we're seeing other airlines also looking at that across the region. So airfares, yes. Accommodation is a bit of a question mark, I think. I think certainly in the higher end, we will see an increase, but that's simply because five-star hotels or four-star hotels have also brought their prices down to be able to capture the domestic market. So their room nights, their price already dipped, I think, at the beginning of the pandemic, and we may start to see that normalize as international tourists are coming back in and are looking to splurge on four-star, five-star accommodation. But I think realistically, tourism stakeholders really know that now is not the right time, if they can help it, to increase fares. They want to get people in. And I think that they are much more concerned about breaking even right now than really turning a profit. Maybe a medium term, we might see accommodation starting to look across the whole spectrum at increasing their prices. But they know now is not the time.
What do you think are the biggest headwinds faced by Southeast Asian countries at the moment with regards to increasing tourism into the region?
There are a few big headwinds that are potentially going to hit Southeast Asia. So, of course, one is the different regulations that we have. And do you need to test? Do you need to quarantine? Do you need to fill in a form? Do you need medical insurance? Are you vaccinated with the right vaccination? All of those are going to play into things. And especially if you compare it to Europe, Europe is very simple to travel around. You don't necessarily need all of that. And so there is a bit of a culture shock for longer haul tourists when they are coming to Southeast Asia to think about that. Another headwind is accessibility. And this is flight frequencies. And of course, pre-pandemic, we were very used to airlines flying multiple times per day, multiple times per week. Lots of different routes. That's not necessarily the case right now. And in particular, I would say the Russia-Ukraine war is worsening that. With this increase in jet fuel, it also makes airlines a little bit more cautious about adding back capacity and adding back routes, simply because they don't know what the demand is going to be. So there's that factor. There's manpower issues as well, not only in accommodation, but across the whole tourism industry too. A lot of people have left the industry, and it may be difficult to capture back and retrain them up to what travellers are expecting now. And of course, there's the economic headwinds. We've seen a lot of GDP forecasts across the region being revised downwards. We're seeing a squeeze on consumer spend, a rising living costs, and whether that will dampen demand and travel demand and people's ability and willingness to spend on holidays is an uncertainty right now.
So what then is your outlook for the tourism sector in Southeast Asia moving forward, Hannah?
I mean, I am the most positive that I have been so far, I think, since the pandemic. I really feel that April has been an extremely positive month for the whole region. There have been a lot of developments. There have been a lot of removals of restrictions. I really think that until all ASEAN countries are at the same kind of restriction levels, as in they have removed as many restrictions as possible, there's not going to be a full ASEAN recovery. Intra-ASEAN arrivals into ASEAN are the biggest source market. So that's one. And of course, the other biggest source market is China. And there is still no indication of when the Chinese outbound market is going to return. And we really need that to see this full tourism recovery. I mean, I think realistically, we're going to see this short burst of pent-up travel for outbound. But whether it can continue, thinking about all of these headwinds, you know, economic or flight connections and so on, in the medium term, in 6 months' time, is unclear. You know, are people very willing to go out right now because they have been trapped in a way inside their country? Will that willingness continue? I'm not sure. But what I do know is I think domestic tourism is still going to continue to be really, really important. And governments across the region need to recognize that fact and still invest and still support domestic tourism stakeholders to keep the tourism industry afloat still. Because just because the borders have opened doesn't mean necessarily that international tourists are going to arrive instantly.
Hannah, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Hannah Pearson, director at Peer Anderson, the research and tourism consultancy, talking to us about her outlook for the tourism and travel sector in Southeast Asia. Optimistic, but there are still headwinds in the way.
Yeah, I think she was quite clear that you can't ignore domestic tourism. That still is a very critical lifeline. You can't expect international tourism to just replace all of the domestic tourism, and that countries should continue focusing on that.
Yeah, I think IATA has also come out to say, right, in terms of travel returning to pre-pandemic levels, you're looking at best 2024. So you do need locals to come out and support the tourism industry, but the government needs to do its part by encouraging that. So maybe things like, you know, they did offer a tax rebate.
They did.
And the income tax, you get 1,000. So things like that do make a difference. And also training, offering training to the hospitality industry. Actually, at the moment, there's a labour shortage, which is a bit of a headache for our hospitality industry. So the government can do things like making it easier to hire people, things like that. Because otherwise, you know, the crisis that they faced in the last 2 years and the losses that they also encountered, well, it's going to be challenging to recoup it.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.